population of the child trafficking occurs throughout the whole lake, and every shore, and every island, and every, everywhere around that lake, you will find children on canoes fishing. You will find girls being used as domestic slaves. And it looks like a huge task, but we know that we can tackle it. We can take care of this in Ghana. Lake Bolton was created to store water primarily for the hydroelectricity. It has improved the water transportation within the country. It has boosted the fishing industry. And it has created irrigation sources for the fishermen. But it has also, like we have discussed, created this huge issue of child trafficking. And I just want to tell you how this happens. The fishermen come from the regions all around the country. And they came to the Lake Bolton to start a new industry. There was promise in 1965, you know, when they flooded out the land, there was promise of a great, you know, business for these men. So they had all these men from all over come to the lake. And when they discovered that it was, you know, they had their nets, they discovered that it was too expensive to pay an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old man to do the work. And so they thought, well, we'll just go back to our home village and we'll bring children. Maybe my brother has a child, or my cousin has a child, or, you know, my friend has a child, and I know they can't take care of them, and I'll just tell them that I'm going to teach them a trade, and so they'll have, so that I can bring this promise of this great industry to them as well. And so they've gone and they brought the kids, some of them with the promise of, I'm going to give them an education. Some of them with the promise of, I will pay you, you know, a certain percentage of whatever I make throughout the year, if you just give me your child for 1 or 2 years. And so these children come to the fishermen, and they have no education. They hardly get rest. They work 14 hours a day. Many of them wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's pitch dark. There's no lighting around the lake, and they have to make their way to the canoe. Many kids talk about crocodiles and electric eels, and there's scorpions on these islands where they're brought to, and, you know, it's just a very dangerous life for a little kid. But the fishermen tend to prey on the younger children. That's why we see a lot of 7, 8, 9-year-old boys, because their fingers are flexible. And what they want them to do is, when that net gets caught on the trees underneath the water, because they flooded out the land, so the water's above the tree level, but the nets will go down and get tangled up in the trees. They want those little boys as little flexible fingers that can kind of get in there and get it out. But a lot of the little boys that go under don't come back up, because they themselves get tangled up in this water, in the nets and the trees, because you can't see. This water is pitch black. You can't, when you are on the canoe and you're on top of the water, you can't see even that far into the water. It is just black. So a lot of the little boys end up drowning. The children, once they're on the lake, they spend their whole day, you know, just hanging out, waiting in the hot sun. They don't eat. They get one meal a day. And a lot of them decide to take that one meal a day in the nighttime, because they don't want to go to bed on an empty stomach. So they spend their whole day in, day out, 14 hours a day, on the lake. And for many of the little boys, they have found that nobody cares. They're alone. They're abandoned. Upset, afraid, just mad at their parents or their grandparents, whoever it was that sold them. Because they know, you know, their 1 year goes by, they didn't see their parents. 2 years go by, the parents still didn't come. 3 years go by. You know, some of these little boys that we rescued have been out there for 6 years. So, 6 years of hopelessness and abandonment. We also rescue little girls. They are brought to help the fish. fishermen's wives, with domestic chores, cooking, cleaning. When the fish come in off the lake, they have to roll them up and dry them out and smoke them. So all of that's their responsibility. And then at night, many of them are sexually abused by the fishermen or the fishermen's sons, or whoever is around that decides that they want to have a way with them. They're not protected. These little kids have to find a place to sleep. A lot of the boys sleep in the canoe. The girls, they have to find a place to sleep outside of the houses on the ground. And you hear stories from them that they're scared because they know that there's scorpions. They see the scorpions and that they know they're around. And they're afraid that if they go to sleep, they're going to get stung. And they know there's crocodiles, so they're afraid they're going to get bit. And so it's just, it's a very fearful life for these kids. There are people out there working to rescue the kids. We have teamed up with an organization called PACADEP, Partners in Community Development. And what PACADEP does for us, for the kids, is they have volunteers on the island. This is just, like I said, a small area. This is just in Kitty Crachy. This is probably within a 10-mile, square mile area of 3,275 square miles. So we're only tackling at this time just a small portion of the larger picture. But what they do is they have volunteers, and the volunteers, interestingly, are fishermen that have given up their kids, given up their slave kids, and then months later seeing the kids at different facilities that the kids have gone to and seeing the change, seeing that they now speak English, they now are getting education, they now have hope. And we have to remember, these fishermen are not bad people. You know, they do beat the kids. They do sometimes kill the kids. But they are just doing what is culturally acceptable in their country. It's culturally acceptable to have child labor. And for them, it only makes sense economically to have these kids working for them. And they can't pay somebody. And so, and they're all Christian. Every single fisherman we talk to is a Christian. Every single one, and most elders in their churches. But they don't understand. I mean, so for them, culturally acceptable, so they've grown up with it. And many of them themselves were child slaves who have grown now into, you know, the main fishermen on the island. So once we're able to convince them, show them that this is wrong. You know, God doesn't want us doing this. God doesn't want us having kids as slaves. They begin to understand. And it's those that give up their kids and later see them that now say, I'm going to help. I'm going to help fight this. And for us, that technique has worked so much better than just going in and taking the kids off the canoes and leaving. Because we found with some pressure, these fishermen will kill their kids. You know, they get scared. They don't want to go to jail. They don't want to be arrested. So they will kill them. So we go in with the whole, let's be friends. Let's work together on this issue. These two boys are Freeman and Felix, and they were rescued in January. We first saw them working. And these boys worked hard. They had big muscles for little kids. They have, and they have developed hardness. And that's what we find with some of our kids. It's kind of hard to break through because they don't trust, because they have been abandoned, and they're going through all that emotional pain. And but now these two boys are doing very well, very, very well at the Freedom Center. This is the Freedom Center. The Freedom Center started in October of 2008. We first rescued 7 kids, and since then we've rescued an additional 9. We have one little boy who is the son to our house parents. So we have 17 kids, house parents, and a house administrator that lives in this house. We are going to rescue 7 more kids in June, and that'll bring us to full capacity. And so, in March, when John was in Ghana, we were given 20 acres of land by some local chiefs who came and saw the work that we were doing. There, this house is about 12 hours by road away from the lake. And so a lot of the people in this area have never seen it. They have no idea that it's out there until you tell them that it's going on, because the government has covered it up. They brought it out for a minute, then wrote some articles saying that they fixed it and left it at that. So a lot of people from Ghana have no idea. But these chiefs have seen the work that we do, they've seen the pictures, they understand, and they give us the 20 acres of land. So we're gonna start building two safe houses right away. My husband and I are relocating there in January with our kids. And things are really moving along. That's good. One thing that we like to do, and I know that it's, you know, throughout, we like to help you find ways to get involved. You know, this project, if these kids in Ghana is something that you're interested in and helping with, there are ways for you to get involved. Like I said, we just started the house in October 2008, so we're very, very fresh at this, very new. But there's a lot of projects that are being birthed, a lot of projects underway, and so there's many, many opportunities. And just a list of few would be to teach the children English in Ghana. Community development, we found that if we can get to the villages where these kids are from and place community development there, so the parents are living in such poverty and they're not, they don't have to resort to selling their kids, that will help you know, stop this problem from that point of view. We also have the building projects on the 20 acres of land. We need medical outreach to the islands. These kids urinate blood from what's called refugia. And it's not only the kids, it's the adults. It's the parasites that live in the water that get in their bloodstream. And that's just on contact with the water. You have to drink the water to get this parasite. So we need medical teams that can help us to deliver medicines to them. And just, you know, just to help the kids that are still slaves on the islands. We also need help in hospitality. And then we're looking at doing summer camps. Starting next summer, we'll do some summer camps at the new facilities. Back home, we need help since we're kind of a two-man team. we need help with like web design, fundraising, raising awareness, administrative. The possibilities really are endless as far as ways to get involved, and I'm sure that's with every organization that's here. End of my part of the presentation. My husband's going to come and tell some stories of some of the kids. And if you have any questions.
Thank you, Lee, for coming today. As my wife has said, there's a lot to be done. There's a lot. It's bigger than what we can think or imagine. That I know we're serving a big God, and that's the most important thing. So I know the God that have rescued me from where I was to who I am today is able to rescue any child, or how many bigger we can think, or the children worldwide sleep with this. So, as my wife said before, 3 years ago when we founded this ministry, it was just one morning, I was just on my devotion. But when I grew up, no parents and no worrying to stay on the street 3 days, no eating. I remember one day when I was crying, you know, God, are you dead? Can you see my situation, or do you see the situation of Africa? So I was weeping and crying. There's a couple from England who prayed, just like what Francis said today, who prayed, said, Lord, what will I do today? What will I do for the kingdom today? No, God, how can you use me? No. God, what will I do now? What just open my eyes to do? Do you understand? The destiny is something far. Vision is something far that nobody can see. So that you can see it, you know, whatever you think. But where you are, what you can see, that's what you can do. That's what's going to lead us to where we are, our vision, our destiny, you know. So I begin to just cry out. cry out to God. This couple from England was asking the Lord, Lord, what would I do for today? And they gave my name, God gave my name today, John Paul. Who is John Paul? They were praying again. And then the Lord said, oh, in Africa. Oh, how can we get it? And they were working with a youth mission. That's how they came to Africa and found me. So it was a long story how everything, how God began to move, you know. So about 3 years ago, I was on my devotion in the morning. I was just praying my devotion. I began to hear the voice of many children. I can't even count to them. It was noise, but disturbing. I said, Lord, what is this? What is this? I hear the voice so clearly. I said, John, there was one voice among them wanted to do that would just come off. And the Lord said, do you recommend that this voice? He said, sound like me, God. He said, John, is it now? Is it time to start what I've called you to do? So me and my wife began to write, and we began to start it. That's how we, you know, started the ministry. We know that we're going to go to Ghana, because we went to Ghana. That's another story. But there are a lot of, you know, much to be done in this mission. There's much to be done, much. I will be leaving here by the 31st of this month. Try the whole month of June, I will be in Ghana. And not for second, they're sending a team with us, because what we want to do, the Volta Lake is so big. We want to do a research to know how big it is, and how many children are inside our highland, how many highland is there. And then, where are these children coming from? So we want to know where are they coming from. What can we do to prevent it first? Because sometimes we rescue some of them, the same ones in the different is still going and buying and bringing. It's like we are not doing nothing. But we want to know where are they coming from, the population of these children coming from, so we can, what can we do?